All right, guys, welcome in to episode number 4 of the SEC Basketball Experience here at Southeastern 14, soon to be Southeastern 16. You may be listening to this, and we may already be 16. So everything you've ever known, just add a couple numbers to it. That's all you have to do. But with Max Barr, as always, and Max, we've made it to 4 episodes to this point, and we're going to look at some very interesting topics today that are really going to focus on actual games going into next season. The ACC-SEC Challenge matchups are out. We're also going to look at some bracketology. Not my bracketology. Someone else's bracketology. That's what we're going to look at. We'll get into the story on that in a little bit. And we'll also welcome in Joey Dwyer to talk about a little Vanderbilt action here. The Commodores trying to revamp things there with Mark Byington. And so we'll talk a bit about that. Before we do, let's quickly tell you about our friends at Bet Online. Of course, they continue to be your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. Baseball, golf, soccer, right up to the top fights in UFC and MMA, and boxing as well. Every stat, every matchup, live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When it's over, you can head to the online casino, play some blackjack, poker, got some slots games, over 150 of those there. Head to the website today, get on the action. Use that promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. All right, Max, we also got some trivia coming up later, too. We don't want people to forget about the trivia because we're on the way back now after a slow start to the trivia in episode 1. But we're getting some right now. But let's talk about these ACC-SEC Challenge matchups. So just full disclosure, we're just going to go through and just kind of give some quick thoughts on all the matchups. But we're going to tease you with something else. Next week, we're going to actually have a video ranking all of these matchups. We're going to rank every single one of these from best to worst, I guess you could say, in terms of the matchups. But here we're going to quickly move through these. So we're going to jump in, Max, with quite frankly what could be the number one game on the list because we're going to try to go in alphabetical order. But do not hold this against me. I'm trying to think of it in my mind alphabetically if I get these right. We're going to start with Alabama, and they are going to play at North Carolina, which, Max, I think will be kind of the headliner along with one of the other games we're going to talk about here in a second. But clearly, pitting these two together once again, pretty obvious matchup, I think, to make for this one.
Oh, yeah, and it's when you kind of look at how these lineups are matched up against each other, you get some really cool positional matchups. They're, you know, both combo guard type of players, but you get that great Sears against R.J. Davis backcourt matchup. You get the stud freshman matchup at the three between Darion Reed and Ian Jackson. And then at the four, two of the best offensive fours with Grant Nelson and Cade Tyson. This is just a great matchup here.
Max, already breaking down just the matchups. Like, just we're ready to go. It's June.
Come on.
And we just want to play games. So, yeah, this will be, I think, the headliner, and we'll see where this one ranks next week. I think we have a good idea. Potentially that. All right, Arkansas, Max, you're going to pull that one up. They're going to play at Miami. Going to be honest with you here. To me, Arkansas was the ultimate missed opportunity team in the ACC-SEC Challenge because you had to give me Arkansas at Louisville. If you're going to send Arkansas on the road, give me Arkansas at Louisville. But instead, it's Arkansas at Miami here, coached by Jim Larrañaga. No slouch at all here. You know, multiple Final Fours for this guy. And we see what the new look Hogs are going to do heading to Miami with Cal at the helm.
Yep, missed some storylines there for sure, but not a bad matchup at all. I mean, Calipari against Larrañaga, I'm not going to complain about that. And you say new look Hogs. Also, I mean, minus Nigel Pack and maybe a second year Matthew Cleveland, this is a new look Miami team. Also, you had Wuga Poplar leave, you had Norchad O'Meara leave, you have a lot of new faces here. So kind of two veteran coaches with kind of fresh faces on their teams. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. And remember too, by the way, we didn't note this at the beginning, these games played in early December. So just worth noting there on the matchups. All right, let's get to the next one, I think, which will be probably, if we look at our rankings next week, I have a feeling we know the top two. Auburn is going to go to Duke. And
Big matchup.
I mean, a huge matchup here. The very old Tigers head to, you know, to Cameron to play this Duke team, which, you know, is certainly going to feature some pretty good players, including some very talented freshmen we know on this team. Auburn will have the experience advantage. There's no question about that, but certainly a lot of talent as well on that Duke roster.
Yeah, I forgot who it was. It might have actually been in the Discord or in a chat. But it was someone was saying like, you got one of the youngest teams with Duke against the SEC's oldest team. Auburn has 10 players that are either a graduate or a senior, and then you've got obviously all the freshman talent on Duke. So you've got two different styles of build here. You got the old talent versus the young talent. There'll be a lot of storylines heading into that one for sure.
All right, the rematch, Gators and Cavs. We saw this one last year, and now we see it again with Florida. We've talked about them. They're going to get Walter Clayton back, bring in Elijah Martin. Of course, Will Richards back too. We see how the front court develops with Mike Ann Logden sitting out this next year. And then you look on the other side, for Virginia, I think there's a lot of players on that roster, Max, but they're also a team that I think probably has something to prove. They brought in, several newcomers and want to try to get back to that Virginia way of maybe getting close to winning national championships, and we'll see if this is the team that doesn't.
Yeah, it's been an interesting few years here for Tony Bennett. But now you're gonna get a changing of the guard here as the oh geez, I'm drawing a blank. Oh, the Reese Beekman years are finally done there at Virginia. I had to watch Beekman clamp up whatever Duke guard I was watching that night, just year after year. So you got a new look Virginia team. You still have McNeely probably running the show there. From a scoring standpoint. But yeah, I don't know a ton about Virginia this year, and I'm not gonna tease any I'm not gonna tease any picks here or anything. We're in
I'm already
June, but
making
my
picks.
God, Blake, I like Florida in this one. Woo! Come
Give
on.
me Florida -8.5. All right. Already putting spreads out on these games playing in December.
Jeez.
My goodness, we're maniacs. All right. Yeah, Virginia, last time we saw them, 67-42 loss to Colorado State in the NCAA tournament. So yeah, not ideal. All right, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Georgia. This is an interesting one, I guess is the best way to put it. I don't, I mean, this is just not one again, like matchup wise, we talk about just huge basketball like matchups. This is just one that, Notre Dame has certainly been rebuilding. We remember where they were. I mean, they were so the youth movement last year with Micah
Yep.
Shrewsbury taking over. Now he goes into year two. They're still pretty young, at least when you probably look at the front end of their rotation. Georgia has added some new players to the mix. Of course, Tyron Lawrence going to headline that group. So we'll see what the expectations are for Georgia, but I don't know, Max, for me, Notre Dame still feels like a team that maybe another year away from where they want to be.
Yeah, still pretty young. Still pretty young. They're working on it. I mean, Shrewsbury, for the talent that they had last year, they put up some good fights in ACC play. There, I mean, I'm just thinking back to last year, the amount of double-digit spreads Notre Dame was catching, and sometimes they'd win those games outright. So I think you got two kind of young teams here, both with what people would kind of say is a floor-raising type of coach, where they usually outperform expectation. So I think this is a sneaky matchup here. I think these are two kind of scrappy teams that have a little bit of something to prove, and a nice win against the ACC slash SEC opponent, whatever one wins this game, would be big right at that December time heading into conference play.
All right, then it's Kentucky where the Mark Pope era begins in Lexington as they are going to head to Clemson. Brad Brownell, who felt like he was on the hot seat for a decade at Clemson, finally, a breakthrough banner season for the Tigers. They get all the way to the Elite Eight, lost to Alabama there, but that certainly gives him a little more job security now, where it felt like, I mean, seriously, maybe not a decade, but it felt like for the last 5 or more years, maybe he was on the hot seat there. But again, a breakthrough season. And now you look at this team, pretty old group here. They also brought in some newcomers, as we know. And so on the other side, though, Kentucky might be one of the oldest teams in the country when you look at the roster that Mark Pope has put together there.
Yeah, this Clemson team did a nice job at reloading quick. Jaden Zachary was really good at BC there down the stretch, running the point. You keep Chase Hunter, Chauncey Wiggins at 6'10" at the threes, always a height advantage, and you keep Ian Shefflin, who's if he was in the SEC, Ian Shefflin would be one of my favorite players. I love that guy. So you get two old teams here, two physical teams too. We were talking with a bit Kentucky, how much we like that defense and that physicality. Clemson's going to be able to bang with them. I like this matchup a lot.
All right, LSU and Florida State, another game, just like Georgia Notre Dame. Feels like it's a football game. And, you know, probably more high profile on the gridiron than the hardwood. But, you know, this is another one where LSU is kind of a team that I think also probably has a lot to prove. Matt McMahon, you know, we thought that they did a little better than expected last year, but still they've certainly got to keep taking steps forward. And that's not easy in this league. As we know, they brought in some good players, which we'll talk about. You know, one of my bold predictions already on the show, Jordan Sears, someone to watch for sure on this LSU team. They look at Florida State. As usual, no surprise that Leonard Hamilton's got a big team. I feel like every team Leonard Hamilton puts together is always one of the biggest in the country. However, they've struggled a little bit in recent seasons. They did go 10-10 in the ACC last year, 17-16 overall, but they've not made the NCAA tournament since 2021. And we'll see if this is the year where maybe they can get things back on track there with the never-aging Leonard Hamilton. I always say, Leonard Hamilton, Max, if you had to do – that should have been our trivia question today, even though it's an SEC podcast. If you had to guess how old Leonard Hamilton is, what would you say?
I would give – well, let's see. I would say high 60s.
Leonard Hamilton is 75 years old. This guy is not aged in 20 years.
Nope. And it's only – it feels like it's only a matter of time before Florida State gets another team back up there, you know, kind of just the cycle of the Leonard Hamilton teams. They get real old and then got to reload. I feel like, you know, the portal era has kind of hurt that team build process a little bit, but man, they got Jameer Watkins back and this team, you said it. I mean, they're going to play only like one guy under 6'7". I mean, like they are big, and LSU's backcourt is not going to be all that big. So interesting matchup here, different team builds. I like it.
All right, Mississippi State and Pitt. This is an interesting one because, again, I think we talked about this offseason, Mississippi State kind of reloading at a couple different spots. Obviously, the addition of Riley Kugel, you get Josh Hubbard back, which is significant. Front court, your guy, Cam Matthews, the bully ball continues. There, and they, of course, have brought in a lot of big guys up front, too. They had R.J. Melendez, we know as well, from Georgia. Kanye Clary, we've talked about him. So Mississippi State's roster, a lot of newcomers in the mix there. And then when you look on the other side, at Pitt with Jeff Capel coming off a really good year, and they have, you talk about a program that's built momentum, back-to-back 22 or more win seasons, you know, the past couple years. And so they go 22-11 last year, got to the round, second round, 24-12. The year before. So, yeah, I think this is one that also seems pretty interesting. And don't forget, this is a rematch from the 2023 NCAA tournament when these two teams met in Dayton. Pitt won that game by a single point in that one to advance to the actual tournament.
Yeah, I still have nightmares of that Shaq Moore corner three. Oh, Thought that was down. Yeah, I'm glad you said that because that's literally all I have written down on my notes is the rematch. Yep. That's all I'm going to leave it at. Hey, if you're a Mississippi State fan, if you're a Pitt fan, if you're checking in, you know that this one is going to mean just a little bit more, a little bit extra emotion involved in this one.
Just means more between Pitt and Mississippi State. All right, Missouri and Cal, the Dennis Gates Bowl here. Of course, Dennis Gates, a former player there for the Golden Bears, was also an assistant there for several years. So he gets Cal, and I'm okay with this because I think Cal is a team that, you know, if you're Missouri, remember, Missouri's already got some tough games on the non-conference schedule. We know at least of a couple, right? We know they're playing Memphis. We know they're playing Illinois. There are probably other games I'm forgetting. So Cal, I feel like still, even though you look at the roster, I feel like Mark Madsen's team still going to be kind of in rebuilding mode here. And don't forget, this is an SEC-ACC game. Don't get this confused, right? There's not a Pac-12 team jumping in here. Cal is in the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference. So what a matchup this is, Max.
Yeah, it feels weird seeing Cal in the ACC. It just feels weird. But hey, I think you're right on it. I think you're catching Cal in kind of a rebuilding year. They did get some older transfers in the portal, but I think this is just going to be a scrappy Mark Madsen team on year one. Maybe a little bit devoid of some talent, but he put together a roster with what he had after the coaching change. So, hey, who knows? Could be a good matchup.
Speaking of year two for former NBA players, Damon Stoudamire, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets are going to play Oklahoma, one of the newcomers here to the SEC, as we know. And yeah, they didn't probably have the season they wanted either in year one, 14 and 18 there for Georgia Tech. And now we see what they're able to do. Roster, I think, is pretty intriguing. Of course, there's a former SEC player on there that's, if you're someone that has not kind of kept up with it, of course, he was there last year, Kwesi Reeves. He used to be at Florida. Now he'll go into the second season there at Georgia Tech. But other than that, Max, this is one that, my guess is when we do our rankings, this will probably be a little bit lower on the list because I think you've got questions here for both teams.
Yep, I mean that's kind of all I was gonna say. It's the all I have is this is the JVon McCollum revenge game.
Ah,
This is JVon
that's
McCollum
right.
against his former team. Shout out Siena, upstate New York, represent.
Yeah, your Ole Miss Rebels could be really good this year too, and they're the ones who get the trip to Louisville to play Pat Kelsey and company in the Cardinals. Like we said, maybe feels like a missed opportunity with Arkansas Louisville, but Chris Beard gonna head to Louisville here to lead a pretty good looking Ole Miss team on paper here, and also another one of those older teams. You've got to think Ole Miss will be one of the older teams in the SEC, maybe the country, based on what their rotation could be. But I also think, this game is probably pretty interesting. Like basketball wise, does feel like Ole Miss and Louisville is kind of that, game that's just going to catch your eye. But when you look at the roster, I think that Pat Kelsey put together in year one, he's got a very fun roster, I think, to work with too here. And so I'm looking forward to this one. I wouldn't be surprised if this sneaks up there rather high in our rankings next week.
Yeah, Louisville's got a former Georgia Bulldog, Frank Anselm, there
That's right.
in the front court depth there. So yeah, when I think these are two teams, Blake, that when you think about them in recent years, you don't think all too highly, but when you look at these two rosters, man, a lot of seniors, a lot of graduates, and some names that have been on some pretty good teams. So I know we would have liked to see the Arkansas Louisville matchup, but just looking at roster against roster, I think this is a pretty cool matchup here.
South Carolina and Boston College, Father Lamont Paris taking on Earl Grant's Eagles there. And, Boston College is also a team. Man, it's hard to believe this is going to be Earl Grant's fourth year. I feel like he's been there longer than that now. But of course, he used to be at Charleston, now at Boston College. Last year, call a full breakthrough year. They won 20 games, but they were 8-12 in the ACC. And, like we said, I think why I find this one fascinating is because I'm really kind of intrigued to see what South Carolina looks like in that first month of the season before we get to this game. Because, like we said, South Carolina is another one of those teams that's going to add several newcomers to the mix. They're expected to make key contributions right away in that rotation. And so, yeah, like I'm pretty interested in this matchup, more so from the South Carolina standpoint than the Boston College one, probably.
Yeah, this is actually for me a very underrated matchup. I think these two teams are in very similar spots. You have South Carolina just lost BJ Mack, and Boston College just lost, oh gosh, Post, Quentin
Quentin
Post. And
Post, yeah.
then same thing in the backcourt. They both lost two guys. South Carolina loses Meechie and Talon Cooper, and then Boston College loses Jaden Zachary and Claudell Harris. So, oh, like very similar last year to this year kind of team transitions. I think it's a pretty cool matchup that how they work that out.
Yeah, Boston College also lost another player to the SEC, who we'll talk about here in just a minute. Another matchup in Devin McLaughlin. But all right, let's look at the Tennessee Vols, who are next up. They're going to play Syracuse and Battle of the Orange here. And by the way, disregard some of the stuff you see under the Tennessee fans are going to say, why on earth does it say Go Gators under there? It's just a nice little fun trolling job here from the person who put these together. But it was not us, for what it's worth. But yeah, so Tennessee, as we said, another team that's, how do you replace Dalton Knecht? Some questions there. But we like the roster they put together. This roster is definitely growing on us now. We talked about that over the past several weeks. And then you've got Syracuse, a team that's trying to sort of regain its prominence as a national power. I think that's, you know, we know what the expectations have been for Syracuse basketball for the longest time. And now Adrian Autry goes into his second season, won 20 games last year, 11-9 overall. And now we see, you know, if they're able to kind of get things headed in the right direction. But yeah, Tennessee seems like the early favorite in this one.
Yeah, my roommate that I lived with this past year is a diehard Syracuse fan. Let me tell you, this team is on the rise. Red Autry's got a squad now this year. J.J. Starling, Donnie Freeman, that freshman at the four, is incredible. He is really good. You got Chance Westry, who was originally at Auburn. So you got a lot of talent. This is a sneaky Syracuse team, Blake. This is a sneaky team.
All right, and then we've got Texas, who's going to play NC State. Of course, we know what NC State accomplished last year. You talk about someone else, an ACC coach that was on the hot seat and managed to have a career-defining season, which, was, of course, was the case for Kevin Keats last year, NC State getting all the way to the Final Four. It was crazy, wasn't it? I mean, we talk about ACC teams just made miraculous runs. Of course, Clemson, NC State, part of that group. And now we see what the encore is for them. And, of course, we also see what things look like in year number one for Texas, who, like we've said, we like the roster that they put together and Rodney Terry and company. This will definitely be one of the games that's rated a bit higher on our list just based on all the elements in play here.
Yeah, and so obviously there's going to be no more of the great big man DJ Burns. But they kind of replaced – you're never going to replace a DJ Burns. But they did fill in a little bit nicely here with Dontrez Styles, who actually started at North Carolina. Ben Middlebrooks was really good in his support role off the bench last year, and you bring in Huntley Hatfield. Not bad, not bad. I think NC State's going to be decent.
All right, one of the more underrated games, I think, on the list here, Texas A&M and Wake Forest. Mm. I like, of course, what Steve Forbes has done at Wake Forest. I think they've got a chance to have another good season there. And then you look at A&M, which Max has already made the bold prediction that this will be Buzz Williams' best team he's had at Texas A&M. So if you combine the two together, I think there's a lot to like about this matchup between the Aggies and the Demon Deacons.
Oh, big time. I mean, Hunter Silas coming back is everything for Wake Forest. And, I mean, my goodness. Just, hey, it's Wade Taylor against Hunter Silas in the non-conference. Just get your popcorn, get comfortable, because that's gonna be entertaining.
All right, then we've got this is like a multiple player bowl here, isn't it, Max?
Yeah.
Between Vanderbilt and Virginia Tech. Like, we've got the Tyler Nickel and MJ Collins bowl here. So, of course, they're going to play Virginia Tech, their former team, Mike Young, leading the way there. And, that's also, of course, Vanderbilt, we know, is a completely new-look roster. But you talk about Virginia Tech, they've also had to bring in some guys to replace the guys we just talked about. So, this is an interesting one. And like I said, I think maybe more so in the South Carolina type role here, where I'm curious to see what Vanderbilt looks like in the first month of the season before we actually get to this game.
Yeah, if you can see in the fine print there on the left, you can say the number of transfers they've brought in. Vanderbilt 10, Virginia Tech 5. 15 combined transfers is the highest out of all the ACC-SEC matchups. So I don't even know where to start.
it's cheating with Vanderbilt, because it's like, you know, they're replacing the entire. But, I mean, like we said, it's, obviously Kentucky and Arkansas also replaced pretty much all their roster. So Trevin Brazil's return hurt that a little bit, Max. We thought, you know, there was a chance it's a completely new roster. But nonetheless, speaking of Vanderbilt, that's where we go next, because we are going to bring in Joey Dwyer to talk about the Commodores in the Mark Byington era. Max, I would say Mark Byington the way our friend Sam Smith says it, but we'll save that for later. We might bring up another voicemail Sam left us this past week. But we are going to bring in Joey Dwyer from VandySports.com. We'll talk all about Mark Byington and the expectations for the Commodores moving forward. All right, guys, we do bring in Joey Dwyer from VandySports.com, Vanderbilt Basketball Insider. Joey Dwyer. That's what we wanted to call you, Joey. So welcome to the show. Like I said, it's kind of funny because you and I usually only see each other once a year, and we're actually going to see each other twice a year now because it's usually at the SEC tournament, but it's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. Glad you guys couldn't get Chris Lee this morning, so you could get me.
You know, Chris is, we couldn't work it out with his agent, but we decided to bring you on from Vandy Sports instead. And so All right, Joey, it's a new era in Nashville for the Commodores. The Mark Byington era has begun. Let's go backwards a little bit. What were your, let's say, initial thoughts when they hired Mark Byington? How have they changed the more you've kind of researched him and those kind of things and kind of what led us to this point?
Yeah, when they originally hired him, I was kind of on board, but I think the thing that really kind of peeved me at that point was the one NCAA tournament appearance. But when you look kind of deeper into his resume, you see the places he's been at, especially before James Madison, the way he's turned those programs around, and even the way he turned James Madison around, although James Madison, I think, is a different situation. I think there's a lot more resources there. But I think if you look at how he's turned programs, if you look at the style of play, I think the more I looked into it and the more I've seen him recruit and kind of embrace the modern era and NIL, and rather than making excuses like a lot of Vanderbilt Athletics people have done over the years, Mark Byington was more about action. And I think that's really stood out to me so far. So the more I've seen him, the more I've liked. And that's just kind of been a pervading theme throughout the offseason. It's like, if first you have a question about this, and as it goes along, that question slowly gets answered. And I think that's a really refreshing taste for Vanderbilt basketball.
Speaking of refreshing, staying on that topic, how has the – basically just the whole recruiting, I mean, you bring in 10 transfers, your job is, you've probably been going nuts over it, but just how has that been? How has that changed? I've seen Vanderbilt fans seemed re-energized with it and everything, just the kind of the new era of Vanderbilt recruiting here.
Yeah, it's certainly a new era. I think they've really, and you guys know this, for a lot of time, Vanderbilt has been a step behind everybody. They're finally catching up and they're finally kind of on a level field, at least in basketball, and that extends to the practice facility as well. It's going to open in September. It's supposed to be one of the nicest in the league. So I think they have a chance at maybe sustainable success, at least on the recruiting trail, that they haven't had in a long time. I think they're about the right things on the recruiting trail. I think they're about getting the right type of guy. And we won't see that maybe for a couple of years come to fruition, because I think they've got a good team this year, but it's hard when you have a team full of transfers. I think you want to see that they're about the right things and you want to see evidence by them retaining guys, and I think we won't see that until after this year. But I do think that it was a really encouraging offseason, just seeing kind of the figures that some of these guys were able to get from Vanderbilt in the portal. I would have been stunned if you told me that a year ago, and I think there's very few coaches that could have gotten that out of the booster base, and there's a lot of money in that booster base, but it takes the right guy to unlock it, and Byington has really done that. Guys, if you told me that they landed A.J. Hogard this time a year ago, I would have called you nuts. And they got Vanell and Lubin last year, but that was different. And even – it's crazy to see – I'm going to get on my soapbox here. The difference between this offseason and last season, the NIL figures, it's unbelievable. Like, I think the rumored figure for Lubin was under $200K, and there's Vandy guys that are rumored dang near $1 million. So it's crazy just to have perspective on the whole thing. But again, if you tell me they're getting Jason Edwards and A.J. Hogard this offseason, I would have almost called you nuts. I thought at the beginning of the year, Malik Mack might have been out of their league, the guy who went to Georgetown.
Yep.
But they got two guys who are comparable or better than him. So another thing with the staff and their recruiting outlook, it's not that they've pinpointed a target and they get that target every time. I think that maybe the more encouraging thing is after they miss on a guy, they're still able to kind of salve it and get a really good player. You look at, they miss Malik Mack, go get A.J. Hogard. Miss Malik Dia, I don't know that they were super upset about that. But then you go get Kajani Wright, a former five-star McDonald's All-American, who I still have some questions about. But the way they've recruited and the way they've kind of been relentless about their plans has really been encouraging to me.
Joey, I think, you know, when you look at Mark Byington, certainly the offensive things really stand out with someone who's going to get up and go. His teams are going to get down the floor, a lot of fast break, transition type stuff. I think flow is a word that's used a lot just in terms of it's going to be kind of pretty to watch, and that will, I think, be welcoming for Vanderbilt fans to see, you know, how that unfolds. When you look at the roster, and you kind of mentioned some of the guys they brought in this year, you know, everybody's already making projections ahead and, you know, saying, can they make the tournament in year one? It's a different era now, you know, because like you mentioned, it's not, you don't have the same team year after year after year, especially when you have a coaching change. I mean, they've got 10 transfers. So, you know, as you look at this roster, as you look at the style he wants to play, how close did they get to being able to, you know, maybe get exactly what they needed to fit the actual playing style that Mark Byington wants to play in year one?
Yeah, it's kind of a bailout answer, but it's really hard to know with how many new guys they have. But what I do think they did a good job of is finding guys that fit And if you look at, I think it was Transfer Portal Scouting, the YouTube channel. I don't know if you guys have seen that, one of the best out there. A lot of his projections for the guys include that they're high percentile transition players. Tyler Nickel, I think, is an 87th percentile transition player. Jason Edwards is a high level one. And then you look at other guys who maybe didn't fit that because of the schemes they played in, but have skill sets that would fit that as well. So I think they've really done a nice job getting guys that they project to fit. And I think a lot of what they really liked this offseason is what they found when they were doing background research and kind of looking into guys' character. I think they did a good job of that.
Okay. So we kind of, when we're looking at the kind of the roster that we have right now, it's tough to put together a depth chart and who's playing where. I think we can kind of agree, Johnny Wright, Jalen Carey, probably going to, you know, soak up the majority of those 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Probably A.J. Hogard and Jason Edwards being the majority of that primary ball handler. Talk to me a little bit about a guy like M.J. Collins, Devin McLaughlin, Chris Mignone, and Tyler Nickel. Kind of that, like, that 3-4 kind of wingish spot, just kind of the options that Vanderbilt has now.
Yeah, it's a mess at the wing, and yeah. I say that in the most loving way possible. Yep. So I think they do have some real talent there. You look at even Alex Hemingway's a guy who doesn't get brought up a lot. Mark Byington called him one of the best shooters in the country. MJ Collins is a guy they're really excited about and kind of the positional versatility he has. He can play the two. I think in some ways, in some lineups, he almost has the size to play the four. I don't think he's best suited there, but I think they really want to toy with him in a lot of different positions, a lot of different roles. Tyler Nickel, I think, probably best suited at the three, but you can play him at the four. McLaughlin mm-hmm. would be my pick to start at the four. I think he's one of the more underrated players in the league. I think he does a lot of things really well. I say this not as an insult because I think a lot of times it'll be perceived as that, but he's a real glue guy for them. He started 36 games for BC last year. He rebounds. He defends. He can get downhill. And there's a video of them playing pickup, and he was really shooting it really well. And I think if that's a welcome development for them, I think that can be a huge thing to where – I was concerned about their spacing all offseason because if they're playing Mannen or Collins at the three, they don't have a whole lot of shooting there. If they play McLaughlin at the four, I'm assuming they don't either. But if McLaughlin can make shots, that really helps them. JQ Roberts, a guy that probably shouldn't be completely counted out. He did a lot of good things for them at the end of last year, although I think they were just begging someone to do good things for them at the end of last year. So I don't know. It's also interesting because Jalen Carey can slide down to the four if they really wanted to. So I think there's a lot of positional versatility there. You look at the two backcourt spots, those are set, right? But Tyler Nickel, he's going to have to play a lot. Hemingway's probably going to play a good bit. Collins is going to play. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody too, but
Grant Huffman, maybe?
Yeah, Grant Huffman's going to be in the mix for point guard minutes, as is Tyler Tanner, because they really like Tyler Tanner.
And really?
Yeah, he's been somebody who's maybe been looked over a little bit nationally with the transfer class, but I think especially because they want to play two point guards at a time, there's probably a role for him somewhere if he earns it. So they've got a lot up in the air right now, and it's a mess, but a mess in probably one of the better ways possible.
All right, so we know that when your fan base just gets beaten down, and let's call it what it is. I mean, when you don't have success, your fan base is going to get beaten down. And I think there's no question that the Vanderbilt fan base, given the ups and downs of the past, I don't know how many seasons now, in multiple, you know, coaching eras, they've been that. And, you know, we've seen the results of that in terms of not a lot of people in the building, all that stuff in recent years. Well, there's been a lot of people in the building, but it hasn't been Vanderbilt fans. And so is Mark Byington, and I know the answer to this question, but I'm curious what you've actually seen because you are around the program a lot more than I am. Are you seeing them do the things that you have to do at this point in June, right? Because you can't win games yet. So we know that's the easiest way to bring people back in is just to go win games, but you can't do that until you start in November. But are you seeing them kind of buy into the, hey, we got to get out and get some of these fans back now. We've got to get season tickets, like all this kind of stuff, because it's one thing just to build a roster, right? But it's another thing to actually start to build that momentum. And it kind of, you know, piggybacks off what Max was saying a second ago, and kind of reinvigorating the fan base, which, again, you can't really do until November. But what have you seen from that standpoint so far, Joey?
Yeah, I think probably the best thing they did in terms of engaging with the fan base all offseason was when A.J. Hogarth was on his official visit. And they went to the tailgate and brought AJ Hogard and let the fans recruit AJ Hogard for them. Now, I don't know if that's the only reason they got him or anywhere near it, but I think that can't hurt. And I think it makes the fans feel important and like they're part of this thing. And I think that's been kind of a common theme. They've made the former players feel like they're part of it. Mark Byington and Will Perdue are, it's pretty well known that they have a pretty good relationship. They have, there's relationships with other guys who are former players know the staff because the staff has reached out to them and has engaged with them. Guys who were in the building who didn't have a great relationship with the last staff have a better relationship with these guys. So I think they're about the right things. I think they've marketed the program pretty well, and there's only so much you can do in June. But yeah, I think if I were to answer that, I would say that they've probably have done enough things by my bar to engage the fan base. And I think after the previous staff and how little that was done outside of like a football game here or there, I think this is really a step forward for them. And you got to win. So it's not everything, but I think it's a real tangible thing that you look at and say, maybe these guys are about the right things. Maybe these guys have a chance to have sustained success here because they are about the right things. And the Hogard tailgate sticks out to me. The way Byington went to the frat house at the opening press conference and told them that he was going to get it going. I think those things are things that a lot of people lose sight of in today's college basketball landscape. And I think they're still important and they're still something that fans cling to and something that's going to help guide you to success and maybe give you a longer leash with the fan base as well.
Okay, so Blake, I think this is my last one. If you have anything else, but Joey, Jason Edwards, super talented. MJ Collins and Tyler Nickel, ACC experience. Devin McLaughlin, ACC experience. Kajani Wright, McDonald's, you, talent, talent, talent. What does bringing in a guy like AJ Hogard, who's been to the Final Four, who's played season after season under Tom Izzo? Not taking anything away from the rest of the group that they brought in, because there's a ton of talent here. But that leadership, the experience, he's going to have the ball in his hands. How does, like, on the court, but also just, like, off the court, how does A.J. Hogard overall change Vanderbilt basketball?
I think he changes it a lot. And I think he completely alters the national perspective on the team because he's a name that people know. And I think, in a sense, he's glue as well, because I think he does a lot of things really well. I think he makes guys around him better. I think maybe the most underrated thing about A.J. Hogard, and it's probably his best skill, is his passing ability. And people do not realize that when they look at tape of him or whatever. The average fan does not look at A.J. Hogard's passing as big of an asset as they should, because I think that's something that's really going to help them. And it's really going to help to unlock Jason Edwards as well, because I think if he had to play the one, it wouldn't be optimal for him. They really like his read and react. They really like some of his decision-making out of ball screens, but he's got to be a guy they look to score. And AJ Hogard does as well, but Hogard's going to have to lead for them. He's going to have to make plays for other guys. So having some of the scoring burden lifted off of him with Edwards is going to be really helpful as well. But yeah, I think he's going to have to be a leader. And in that pickup game, I caught a glimpse of it, which was a really small thing, but the trainer asked them where they wanted to play, and AJ Hogard immediately stepped up. Him and Jason Edwards made that decision. So that kind of tells you who's leading the group. They do have some older guys that weren't there yet, but those are the guys I think that are going to have to be big voices for them. And Tom Izzo talked a lot about that he needed Hogard to be more of a voice. Now Hogard has a chance to do that. And I thought it was really interesting when I talked to Mark Byington a couple weeks ago. He was talking about how he thought Hogard did need a new voice in his ear, and maybe he needed a new challenge. And I think everybody kind of in Hogard's circle has kind of echoed that sentiment as well. So it's interesting to hear, but with all that experience and him kind of being the scapegoat for the Michigan State fan base, I think has really driven him to this point. And AJ Hogard has not been shy. He wants to be an NBA player, and he thinks Vanderbilt's the place that can do that for him. And I think there's a lot of doubt that he can do that, but just the confidence that he has, they really like. They really like his toughness. And I think they want him to be a guy who sets the tone for the team. And in the past at Michigan State, he hasn't done a perfect job of that. But if he can take a step into that at Vanderbilt, I think that's a huge thing for them. If he can't, then I don't know that this team's a tournament team or maybe anything close to it. AJ Hogard is a huge X factor of this team. There's a couple of them, but he's going to be their leader, and he's going to be their go-to guy that has to make plays when it matters, has to lead. And yeah, it's a good question, because I think AJ Hogard is maybe the piece that's going to make this thing go.
Yeah.
You may have just answered the last question, because I've asked everyone this when they've come on. We've been very optimistic about how this could go for Vanderbilt this season. We have. There are people, I've said, one of my bold predictions is they're going to make the tournament. We've already seen them very close in some of the bracketologies. We're going to talk about one in a minute. But let's say, as you look at the roster, I would say the thing that could excite you most would probably be the they got a lot of experienced players. Like they're a very experienced team. Max just brought up guys with ACC, Big Ten experience. Yep. They have Hogard. They have kind of your most important player at your most important position probably. And so that's a nice thing to have. But if there's one thing you look at with this roster on paper, like we said, we have no idea. But if we fast forward 6 months and we're like, uh-oh, it's not coming together the way we thought, is there something you think that you have, you know, a question or what's the biggest question you have about maybe this area? You know, other people have brought up, well, it's the three-point shooting or it's the rebounding, that kind of stuff. So what's the one thing that would stand out maybe that, let's say this doesn't all go according to plan in year one, just based on the roster we have in front of us?
I would say it's an over-reliance on backcourt play because I think the front court I have questions about. They don't have a guy over 6'10". Well, I do think they have some physicality, they have some athleticism, but they don't have a Liam Robbins or anything close to it. And I think that really came back to bite them last year. I think that staff really overestimated how much a backcourt could do for them. They thought in the offseason that they could be a team that won a couple tournament games. And I think they just completely lost sight of what the front court could do for them. And I think the fan base has kind of fell into that trap a couple times too. So the front court's something I have questions about. If they're not good enough, they're going to have a hard time. They have good guards, but you guys know this, you cover the league. They don't have good enough guards to single-handedly win games against other teams because these backcourts are really good. You look at Alabama's backcourt, look at Kentucky's backcourt, look at Florida's backcourt. I don't know if Vanderbilt has a top five one in the league, and they have a really good one. But again, like last year, they have two good guards. They probably have more than that this year, but they can't win just because of those guards. Can they make shots from the wing? I think that's a big question for me. Tyler Nichols, really the only one, and Hemingway, who I really have a great deal of trust in on a catch and shoot three, and that's a concern for me. I don't know if it's rebounding as much as shot blocking, just general interior presence that I'm concerned about, but I think Tajani Wright's got a lot to prove. I think he's really got to go up a little bit stronger around the bucket, and that's kind of the thing I've said, but it sucks to see at times him not use his physicality because he's an animal, but a lot of what he's doing is floaters in the middle of the lane or stuff like that, which I don't think is properly utilizing his skill set at times. And if you see him really attack the basket, he could be a special player for them. And Jalen Carey, I think, is going to be a really good player for them as well. So I don't have questions maybe on the individual level in the front court. I think both of those guys are going to be good players for him. But I just have a question about, are they missing some things in terms of what the front court provides? Maybe JQ Roberts can give him some of that. I think he's a good shot blocker. Stack played him at the five a little bit last year, which I don't think is his optimal spot, but I think is a spot he could play maybe effectively at times, especially in a up-tempo small ball type lineup. So we'll see, but I think shooting is probably something I'm a little concerned about. You look at Grant Huffman, his percentages are low. MJ Collins' percentages are low. Manon all the time didn't get guarded out on the three-point line. McLaughlin, I think, is a fine shooter, but he's going to have to shoot a little bit better and be more of a threat. So you're relying on some shooting things that I don't know that you'd love to be relying on, and Jason Edwards takes some bad ones as well. But guys, I think they're in a good spot. I think they have a chance to be a tournament team. And at this point, last year, I think we were saying they had a chance to be, but I think the talent level is much improved. I think the system fits better for these guys. And I think this is a system that could maybe lead us to some sustained success. And I don't know that we've thought about that with Vandy basketball for a long time. The practice facility, the NIL, the coaching staff, the system that they run. I think if they have a good year this year, it can really springboard them into a lot of good things in the future.
Joey Dreyer, Vanderbilt basketball insider. In all seriousness, we joke about the title, but like you're not going to find anybody that is tapped into the program as much as Joey is. So if you're curious about this new look roster and new era for Vanderbilt, Mark Byington, you can head over to Vandy Sports because I know Joey has a lot of great stuff he's already done with his team, and there'll be much more to come. So Joey, we appreciate you joining us. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
No, thank you guys for having me. Twitter is at @Joey_DWY. I missed the memo on the Twitter under the name in the in the picture, but I'll get it next time as long as there is a next time. Maybe I'll see both of you at the SEC tournament again this year. Maybe somebody makes an appearance at Memorial Gym. We'll roll out the red carpet. I'll tell them to get good catering that day. So thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. And it's nice to cover a program that actually has some excitement around it.
All right, a great conversation with Joey Dwyer. As we said, Vanderbilt's one of the teams that's very interesting heading into the season, given, like we said, a new roster, and that's always, I feel like that's kind of been the focus of several of our first episodes here, Max, looking at like Kentucky and Arkansas and seeing how these teams move forward now with new coaches at the helm. But now, Max, it's one of our favorite times each week. Trivia. Who did they play for? Always a fun time. You know what? I'm going to go first on this one. Again, there will be some weeks where I want to go back way far just to, you know, really test you and, you know, so I can talk about this player from days gone by, but I will stay a little bit more recent. This isn't that far back, but, this player, I guess we go back to, I don't know if I give you the year, it's not really gonna matter, but, maybe I should give you the year. Well, that'd be a little bit of a hint that may help you out a little bit. So this guy played with this particular team from 2016 to 2019, pretty much a 4-year starter. Okay. And he didn't start every game every year, but he was a regular, really halfway, I guess, through his first season. He started a ton of games the rest of the way. I thought that he was probably one of those guys that he doesn't fit your traditional bully ball type criteria because he only, as I look at this, he only attempted 2 threes in his entire career. He did go 0-2, so I don't know if that qualifies for you, but got to the free throw line quite a bit. Some were better than others, but very physical, shot blocker, rebounder, did a lot in the paint. So the question is, Max Barr, who did Derek Ogbede play for?
What?
Come on, Derek Ogbede, someone who played.
How do you spell that last name?
Well, no, you're not Googling this thing. You kidding me?
My hands are right here.
O G B E I D E. Come on, this was not that long ago. We're trying to build up your SEC basketball history knowledge, and so he played alongside. Was it all 4 years, or was it? I don't know if these guys played together. I think they did play together for quite a bit. He played alongside one of the best big men in the SEC, and he was kind of, they had a great 1-2 punch with these two guys because, you know, in the front court, these two were a lot to handle for opposing front courts. Now, it never probably led to the success that this team wanted from a tournament standpoint. I don't know if they got to the tournament in any of those years for Derek Ogbede, but, they had two front court guys in at least a couple of those years that were, when you could put Derek Ogbede at the 4, this other guy at the 5, or vice versa, you had a front court that was tough to handle. So,
well, God, this is going to be terrible.
you're just going to have to. I'm trying to give you more hints.
I'm just going
to. I'll give you one more. One more hint. The coach of Derek Ogbede in all of these years is now coaching in the SEC. Now, I didn't say head coach or not, but he is now coaching in the SEC. He's made his triumphant return to where it just means more. Because at his last stop, it doesn't mean anything anymore because that place doesn't exist.
You are just throwing me on a whirlwind of these hints.
I'm giving you every hint I can give you.
I'm
lost trying
right now.
Everything. This guy is now an assistant coach as a former head coach in the last stop. It no longer exists there. The school still exists, but the
Ole Miss.
No. The conference no longer exists. And that, of course, I'm talking about the Pac-12, and I'm talking about a former Cal head coach, which was Mark Fox, who, of course, was a former head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, where Derek Ogbede played from 2016 to 2019. So, Derek Ogbede played alongside Yonte Maton, an absolute stud, as we know, in SEC basketball.
I would have got that.
Well, I know, but I couldn't give you that. So, that would have been way too obvious. But those teams that had Ogbede, they had Yonte Maton, J.J. Frazier, you kept trying to figure out, were they going to get over the hump, and just could never take that next step. But man, they had a lot of good players there. And I think Ogbede was one of the more underrated front court guys in the league. He was very consistent. Again, kind of a bruiser. Guy who did not afraid to be physical, built like a rock, 6'9", 250. And so, yeah, he was, again, didn't always have to be the top scorer because he did have Mayton and Frazier and those guys around him. But I was a big Derek Ogbede fan at Georgia.
I think I would have been too.
You would have loved him. Like, I'm not saying he's Cam Matthews, but
I'm liking what I'm seeing.
He was, you know, he had some free throw games that were right up your alley. But yeah. But I mean, again, he was the guy who kind of had to play off of, like I said, some of those years having to play off of Mayton. But remember, he also played with Nick Claxton. Don't forget that too. He was also with Claxton. I want to say that was 2019. So yeah, like he was kind of the guy that, you know, played alongside these just. I mean, they had a team in, what was it, 2018. So Georgia in 2018, they had Yonte Mayton, Nick Claxton, and Derek Ogbede. Like, their front court was loaded. And so, yeah, like, I just they could never make that next step to get to that tournament success that Georgia was looking for. And obviously, as we know, they're still looking for that at this point. So,
yeah, I'm looking at his 2018 numbers, 47% from the free throw line. Woo! I like that.
Of course you do.
All right.
Here we go.
If I get one this whole summer, we'll celebrate. Okay. Mine is, I think you'll get this too, because it's pretty recent. So we have a current NBA player. So very, very good. Before winning the national championship with Baylor in 2021, this current NBA player spent his freshman season in the SEC. Came off the bench, but played a decent little role. Where did Davion Mitchell play?
Davion Mitchell, Max Barr, was once recruited by Mr. Bruce Pearl to play at the Auburn Tigers, where that was, like you said, he went on to win a national championship at Baylor, but man, I want to say Auburn's roster that year. When did he transfer? They won the championship. What was that, 2020? Baylor won it all?
21.
Oh, 21.
Got
that's right.
Because
it came
20.
That's right. I was thinking, yep, like the tournament was canceled in 20. That's right. And then they played, yep, in the empty, somewhat empty arenas in 2021. That's what kind of, yes, caught me off guard there. But yeah, so Davion Mitchell started Auburn, what, 2018? Yep. He was there with, I want to say, Mustafa Heron was still on that team. Of course, Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, who else on that team? DeShaun Murray, Chuma Okeke was there. Man, they were just that. I mean, you want to know why Auburn got to the Final Four. That roster that he had during that time period, which, again, Mitchell was included for 1 year, but you think about all the studs that were on that roster throughout that kind of time period, and my goodness, it was just unbelievable. And so you could kind of see, again, the way things were, because he transferred after 2018, right? And so 2019, yep, that's the year that Auburn got to the Final Four.
Bryce Brown's senior year.
Yeah. Should have got to the national championship.
Yep.
But yeah. So Davion Mitchell, good one. Good one. But you know, you're going to have to stump me a little bit better than that next time. So. All right. Speaking of Auburn. It's a great transition because we are going to go to guess the starting lineup. This one should be, I think, rather easy, too. The one we had last week was Tennessee. We moved through that one pretty quickly because it seemed, other than maybe a couple spots, we felt pretty good about Tennessee. I think Auburn's you're going to feel pretty good about, too. And I think, as I like to do, Max, I like to lock in the first guys just to, you know, feel, yep, like, okay, if we're building around it, let's go ahead and put the locks in there. We know Jahni, yep, Broome's starting. We know, yep, Denver Jones is starting. We know Chad Baker-Mazzara is starting. And then I think, you know, it gets interesting from there, but I think you're going to see J.P. Pegues have an opportunity, even though we talked about Todd Pettiford. Looks fantastic in some of the stuff we've seen from him so far. So there's a lot to like there, but you're probably, you know, again, you're talking about a guy who's played a ton of games in Pegues. It's hard to see him probably coming off the bench right away. I think he's going to have a pretty good opportunity there. And again, Bruce also can have the potential to play, you know, several guards here, you know, at a time. And I think that's also an intriguing idea. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, is it as simple as just plugging Chaney Johnson into that four spot and saying, there's your lineup? Or what do we think?
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting, because it's like then do you want to, like, because you have that Miles, we had Miles Kelly at 6'6" also. I've seen some people, start him over a Denver Jones or a Pegues, but I'm like, there's no way. Denver Jones has got to be on that floor. No way. So I've talked to some Auburn fans, and they really like what Chaney brings. They said, I think it was Bruce Pearl that said it last year, that said, Chaney Johnson is going to get on the floor on based on his work ethic alone, and not even talent or what he can bring basketball wise, just his motor. So they do like Chaney Johnson. Now, do I think he can step into that Jalen Williams role where you're flirting with all SEC honors and uber efficient offensively? I'm not sure. So I've played around in my head, like, oh, do you go a little bit small and maybe do like a Miles Kelly at the three, Baker Mazzara at the four, and a small ball stretch the floor type of lineup? But I'm not sure. Do you lean a specific way, Chaney at the four or a small ball?
I think the value of having Chaney Johnson in there, although you could also just say, well, you've got Jahni Broome, but I think you do need one more guy who feels like, expectation from a rebounding standpoint. To me, that is like one of the things that, and not to say Baker Mazzara can't rebound either. I mean, he averaged 3.7 rebounds per game last year. Chaney Johnson averaged 3.4, but think about two. They also played a difference, a little bit of a difference in minutes too, right? So, yeah, I mean, if you look at his minutes last year, like, it was kind of sporadic, but he did, even in the limited minutes he had, like, he was pretty productive. And I think that's something where it happens each year. Then you just kind of say, okay, let's give him the opportunity to take that next step. So now how productive can you be if we give you 24 minutes a game or whatever versus 15 minutes, right? And he's awful. I mean, he's older. The size element, I don't know. It's interesting. I would probably lean more towards the Chaney Johnson, Jahni Broome, Baker Mazzara. It gives you more size, of course, but I just think that's probably the way you can do it. But like I said too, I'm also intrigued by the idea of you've got three guards there that all, I mean, if Pettiford just comes along, right, and he's like, we can't keep him off the floor, well then I think it's going to be hard to keep Denver Jones off the floor with the shooting ability. It's going to be hard to keep Pegues off. We talked about him. We love him. So like then you can start getting pretty creative. But and then of course you've got Dylan Cardwell, potential first guy off the bench type thing. And so, or just give me the Hulkamania lineup. Give me Jahni Broome and Dylan Cardwell as your two in the. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know
Well,
how
with
much they do
Broome's
that,
shot
but.
that he's developed, he can play that four, I feel like.
If you want to go big, you can go big there. Then you can go Johnson off the, May first guys off the bench. Crazier
Be
things have happened.
interesting. Be
How
interesting.
many times do you remember them playing them a lot last year? I know Auburn fans were like, "Of course they did," or "Of course they didn't." I don't remember. Like, it all runs
They
together,
did.
but.
I do remember seeing it a little bit. I do remember seeing it a little bit, but not much at all.
Yeah, and not, as I say, it had to be very little.
Very little.
So, like you mentioned, it's really just you have to slot someone in with the Jalen Williams type role. And I think it makes the most sense to do Chaney Johnson there because they did do that quite a. I'm looking at sort of the frequent lineups last year on KenPom. So, like 5.7%, they had a lineup of Holloway, Denver Jones, Baker Mazzara, Chaney Johnson, Broome. So, you got four of those guys back, right? Then you just slot in your point guard. So, or that was, sorry, that was 7.4%. So, I think that's, to me, it just makes the most sense. So,
Yeah, I went back and looked at Chad Baker Mazzara's year at San Diego State, and then the year before that at Duquesne also. And at San Diego State, he backed up Matt Bradley at the three, didn't play anything else. And then at Duquesne, primarily the three, a little bit of the two. He hasn't been slid up there to that four, and that makes sense. He's a little bit of a thinner frame, for a 6'7" guy. So yeah, I think I would go the two, the Denver Jones, Baker Mazzara, Chaney Johnson, Jahni Broome for now, Pegues at point guard. But from what we've seen and what we've heard, I would not put it past a Tahaud Pettiford maybe mid-season slides into that point guard role either.
Yeah, I think we have to remember too, like there is a, I mean, again, we've seen and heard a lot of things about Pettiford. There's a lot to like, but I also don't think we can just look at JP Pegues as sort of just a normal trend. Like this guy averaged 18 points a game last year for Furman. Like he averaged 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Yeah. Like I think it's going to be impossible to keep this guy off the floor a lot. But again, I'm not there. I don't know. Maybe, you know, again, we always say guys, how they transition, but this guy is just, man, he is a rock solid scorer. He also gives you something that I think as we look at this Auburn team, you know, you need, and that's a 3-point shooter, like someone who can come out and knock down three. So that's where, but if Pettiford's as good, like if he's just fantastic and you're like, all right, maybe we got to just Denver Jones, JP Pegues, you two are just going to have, yeah, I don't know. So,
yeah. I think for now, though, we can agree on that. Pegues to start.
Yeah, I'll go with him. I think.
Okay.
You're probably not bringing in a guy that with that kind of averages to
and not start him. Bench.
Yeah.
I like it. But,
yeah. All right. So there you go. There are some options for the Auburn Tigers. Not that Bruce Pearl is seeking our advice in any way, shape, or form. But we are guessing the starting lineups here. That's why we're doing this here. He's doing it and getting paid a lot of money. So, all right. Max, are you ready? For the most incredible topic that we could have before we wrap up with our prediction. And we will go through this very quickly. Way too early SEC bracketology. From ESPN's Joe Lenardi. Max, did you get that? From Joe Lenardi at ESPN.
Oh, from Joe Lenardi.
It's Joe Lenardi's bracket, Max.
Joe, okay, okay.
So what prompted that? And I don't blame people because, as Max pointed out, it's the Twitter algorithm now and the way they display longer tweets, they yeah. only show you like, and then you have to click on show more to actually see like a link at the bottom. So I put this out on Tuesday. I was just sharing Joe Lenardi's bracketology, and boy, the response was not great towards yours truly because people thought this was my bracketology. And I'm like, guys, this is not mine. I have the link in there. Trust me, there are some teams I just simply do not agree with. But it's June, and it's never too early to start projecting the NCAA tournament for next March. And so, here we go, Max. Are you ready for this?
Hit me with it.
Bracketology for the SEC. Just incredible. All right, Alabama's the number one seed. I think we're okay with that. Yep. Joe Lenardi has Alabama playing the winner of Navy and Wagner in Lexington, Kentucky, in the Atlanta region. Alabama would play the winner of Michigan and Kansas State there. So, there you go. Alabama as a number one seed. The number two seed from the SEC, the Auburn Tigers, playing yep. Lipscomb, also yep. in Lexington. So Lexington turning into an Alabama basketball, the state of Alabama, a basketball, you know, hotbed there. They're going to play Lipscomb, and he's got Michigan State as the 7, Dayton as the 10. That is in the Midwest region in Indianapolis. So worth noting on that. All right. Now I got to remember who the next team is listed. I think we go straight to the 4 seeds, but yep. I'm going to pull this up just to make sure. So the number 4 seeds, we have Tennessee, who is a number 4 seed, and Lenardi has the Vols playing Vermont. Ooh, you never want to play a John Becker coach team. Ooh. Playing Vermont in Providence in the East region. Cincinnati, Princeton's the 5-12 game there. If I'm Tennessee, I'm okay with that. The only issue I would have is I'm Tennessee is I'm the number 1 seed UConn's part of the bracket. So that would not be ideal. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to the next number 4 seed, which is the... I've lost my place. Who is it, Max? Who is it? There is another 4. It's Texas. The Texas Longhorns, who are also a number 4 seed, playing Arkansas State, the 13, UCLA, the 5, Grand Canyon, the 12. They are in the West against Houston. So... yeah, so there you go. Grand Canyon again, potentially wanting to spoil the fun.
I like them.
For that one. All right, the number 5 seed, the Arkansas Razorbacks. John Calipari's Hogs. Playing number 12 seed Bradley in Cleveland with the number 4 seed Purdue, number 13 seed Louisiana Tech in that part of the bracket. And they are in the Midwest region with number 1 seed Kansas. So there is that. Then we keep going. We have Texas A&M. We got a triple 6 seeds here. We've got Texas A&M as a 6 seed. They would play the winner of Louisville and Providence in the play-in game. That's in Raleigh against the number 3 seed North Carolina, number 4 seed Charleston. So could we get a Louisville-Charleston matchup in the second round? Texas A&M would hope not. So,
oh, boy.
There you go. So there's that one. Your Mississippi State Bulldogs, also a number six seed, projected by Joe Lunardi to play the winner of who else? This is great. Who else would they play the winner of, Max, other than St. Mary's and Pitt? Because, of course, they've got to play Pitt again. So wouldn't that be something if that just wound up being the case, though? Like, wouldn't that be something?
That would be hilarious.
Creighton the 3, Weber State the 14 there. And that one that I mentioned, there's another number 6 seed. It is the Kentucky Wildcats. And this, sign me up for this one. Kentucky, the number 6 seed, against the number 11 seed, USC Trojans. A must-bust versus Mark Pope game in this one. That is on the cards here. Baylor's the 3 seed. UC Santa Barbara, the 14 seed. I'm not sure Baylor wants to see UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Based on a recent game they had, what was that, a couple of years ago or something?
Yep.
So Kentucky's the 6 seed. And then we march on, and don't worry, I'll let Max chime in here shortly. I'm just reading the full list, and then we'll give some quick thoughts. Number 7 seed is Ole Miss. He's got the Rebels in Raleigh against number 10 seed Rutgers. But this would be the Max Bar Bowl right here. If Ole Miss had to play the winner of the Duke Blue Devils and the Akron Zips. Ole Miss and
Wait,
Duke.
Wait, do you know that I was born in Akron?
Is that true? Okay, this is the Max Bar region. Lunardi has set it up. This is the Max Bar region here.
Unbelievable.
And you know where these games will be held? In Raleigh. So... Incredible.
My brain would short circuit. I would just I would just freeze up.
You wouldn't know what to do. All right. One that our guy Malik got on me for, but remember, Malik, return your attention to Joe Lunardi, not me. The number 8 seed Florida Gators playing the number 9 seed Wake Forest. There's another rematch for Florida in a game that was played last season. Florida number 8 against Wake Forest, the 9. Number 1 Houston would be up next in Milwaukee. And then two SEC teams on the outside looking in. And right there on the outside looking in. Missouri, the second team out of the field. Vanderbilt, the 4th team out of the field. So, by my math, Max, that is 12 SEC teams within, the top 72 or whatever, right? And so 10 are in, 2 are right there kicking at the door. Pretty good for the league, even if I don't agree with some of these placements here in June. Florida Gators potentially at the top of this list.
Yeah, the placements were, we could nitpick and pull apart probably most of them. But so that leaves Oklahoma, LSU, South Carolina.
Let's stop there. Our Father Lamont Paris being doubted yet again, as South Carolina fans noted on Twitter. At your own peril, Joe, at your own peril. Doubt Father Lamont Paris at your own peril. That's all I'll say.
Well, hey, I mean, that's an intimidating task there. I wouldn't want anything to do with that. But
who's the other
that
team?
Does leave one more, and I am drawn an absolute blank. Georgia.
Georgia, LSU. Yeah, Georgia. There you go.
Georgia. Georgia, LSU, South Carolina.
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma missed the cut. Okay. And how much? Okay, so here's a question, Blake. Out of those four, the four that missed the cut, it could have been what you just said, but if there's one of those teams where you think they've got the best opportunity to jump into that, just that Vandy Mizzou conversation, that bubble talk, what of those four teams left out do you think's got the best chance?
South Carolina.
I thought that was going to be your answer.
I can't do it again, man. As much as I want to, and I'm very curious to see where, like we say, preseason polls don't mean anything. From my perspective, our rankings truly don't mean anything. We're just projecting based on what we see on paper. I'm curious to see where South Carolina is projected, because I think when you're going to look at the roster, people are going to compare their roster to other teams and say, well, they should be lower down the list because as this team has more talent, that team has more talent. But I don't know, man. It's the Lamont Paris factor, and I would say South Carolina probably without hesitation, even if you can make arguments that maybe you like Georgia's roster better or whatever. I'm going to – we can't forget about CMB in there. Like,
I know.
this guy could be just an absolute superstar. And when you got one of those leading the way, you got a shot always. And so I would go South Carolina. The team, if we want to, like you said, we could nitpick the actual seedings all we want, yeah. And we're not going to go through these, but I would say Florida. Florida's a team as an 8 seed. I don't see. I think Florida would be much higher if I were – I'm not a bracketologist, but Florida would be the team that I would have much higher than he has them right now.
I think them being misseeded last year is going to skew their early projections this year. Last year they were a 7, had absolute, should have been a 5, had no business being down at a 7 at all. So I think then you look at, okay, how'd they change this year? Do they get better? Do they get worse? Everyone can have their own opinion, but I feel like from a bracketology standpoint, Lunardi refers back to their last year being a 7 and then puts them at an 8 this year. And it's like, what? Well, they should have been a 5. They should have been a 5. So if you do think they take a little bit of a step back, as Lunardi has it as a 1 seed line step back, you should be a 6 in my eyes, not an 8. But it's just my opinion.
The team I think is ranked too high. I'm saving that for. I'm not revealing that just yet. You'll find out when we get to our rankings here. We'll do those in the next couple of weeks. We'll go ahead and just set the world ablaze whenever we put our rankings out in the next couple of weeks. So we'll look at that. All right, Max, we finish up here, as always, with our one bowl prediction. As we always say, we're having fun with this. We're listing all these and like to see if we get any of these right. Some will be bolder than others. But all right, you go first.
Okay. This is now the fourth prediction. So I've got Colin Murray Boyle's first team. Kentucky goes into March as a top 4 seed. And this next year's A&M team will be Buzz's best A&M team he's had. No, I changed it to best Buzz team ever. Remember, I changed that.
Oh, you said best. I thought you just said A&M team. Best Buzz team ever. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow.
That's probably going to be the boldest one I have.
All right.
But this next one for this episode, I'm keeping it on theme. I've kind of made that a trend here with my bold predictions. Auburn, the Auburn Tigers, will go undefeated at home this next year.
Okay.
Now, that includes conference games against Alabama, against Tennessee, against Florida. I believe Kentucky. Might be wrong on that one. Don't quote me on the Kentucky. But there are some there are multiple home games against what will be projected the top half of the SEC. And I'm going to say Auburn goes unscathed this conference year, undefeated at home.
All right. I don't have a great one this week. And I feel like because I'm about to give you this one, I'm already like, wait a second. I made a bold prediction the first time around that also involved first team all SEC guys. Like, eventually I'm going to make like 14 bold predictions of all SEC guys. So at least maybe if I get some of them right, maybe that's the way to do it. But like we said, the SEC does offer at least 9, I think, on the first. And what if there are ties? You could have 11 players on the first team all SEC, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
So because of that, I'm going to add one more to the mix. And I think I'm going to stop after this because I'm like, there's like, you know, 7 other players that are surefire. You got to lock them in. So I won't make any more of these, but it's based off the conversation we had today. If, and you combine everything together we just talked about in 2 segments here, bracketology, Vanderbilt, the 4th team out. So they're right there. Joey, we talked about this roster and the person who is going to either drive this roster to an NCAA tournament appearance or maybe they're not going to have enough help or is relied on in a different role than he needs, all those things.
Yep.
So give me A.J. Hogard, your guy, A.J. Hogard from Sparty, first team, all SEC. Leading the NCAA tournament-bound Vanderbilt Commodores, who I believe was also one of my bold predictions. So I'm trying to tie it all together here now. So tying it all together, give me A.J. Hogard. First team, all SEC.
I think that is a very smart way to tie it together because I think if they do make the tournament, you're going to need an all SEC type of year from A.J. Hogard. Mm-hmm. Very smart there, Blake. I see what you're trying to do.
Storytelling is what we do here at the SEC basketball experience. I'll see if I can run with that one. I don't even remember what my others are at this point. I know I had John L. Davis and Elijah Martin.
Yep.
What were the others? I had Vanderbilt making the tournament. AJ Hogard, there was one more somewhere. I don't remember what it was. I'll go back and find it.
It was whatever last episode's was. I forgot what it was.
I don't remember.
Oh, Jordan Sears. Jordan Sears.
Oh, yeah, Jordan Sears talked about. There you go. So that was kind of an odd one, I guess. But oh, well. That's what we do here.
I'm going to – you can stop me here if you want, but I'm going to say – you just said the SEC team, they usually do like nine players or something like mm-hmm. that. When we do our actual preseason awards and we give them all out and everything, we're doing five.
Okay. Did we do five not last really, year? Did we did more, I think, last year.
We did seven.
Yeah, five.
Five. Okay. Okay. So I'll make that clear.
Well, I just want to make it clear my bowl predictions apply to the SEC number, not ours, because it may be hard to find spots on the five if we do it that way. So there you go. All right, guys. The SEC Basketball Experience, episode 4, in the books here. We appreciate you guys watching and or listening as always. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can also listen on any podcast app you use. Find Southeastern 14, our feed there. Remember, you can also search for Southeastern 16. We're making that switch in the next week or so. So if you're watching this later, search for Southeastern 16 or 14. You'll find us one way or the other on that. And again, check out everything else we have on the channel. The first three episodes of the SEC Basketball Experience are up. If you want to go back and listen to those, a lot of evergreen stuff in there. You know, again, it's the off season. Go back and watch those if you haven't already or listen to them. And yeah, be sure again to check out everything else we got on the channel. SEC football stuff, getting ready for the season, SEC baseball, winding down the College World Series. If you want to sponsor the show, you can do that by reaching out to caroline.smith@southeastern14.com. We're always looking for sponsors for all these different segments or the show in general. So you can reach out and also check out what we got going on underneath the description there. You see all those little products we got down there. If you click on those, buy something from Fanatics or Walmart or Target or whatever it is down there. That helps out the channel, allows us to do more episodes for you guys. So, again, we appreciate everything here, and it is an experience as always in SEC basketball and a lot of fun stuff coming on episode number 5. So we appreciate you guys watching and listening, and we'll talk to you again here soon at Southeastern 14.